Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Kathleen O and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, October 1st, 2018, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the big book and we are at page 127, the first paragraph, beginning with the head of the house, through five paragraphs, ending with "They suspect Father is a bit balmy," and we'll be commenting on all five paragraphs. Today's readers are Carrie H. for the 12 steps and Reggie O. for the 12 traditions. Our readers of the text are Leslie M., Kathy G., and Kathy Jo P. The share ID for yesterday's special edition, Sunday, September 30th, 2018, is 11,979, 11979. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 11,980. That's 11980. Our newcomer greeter for today is Melanie C. The OA preamble: Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose: OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Carrie H. to read the 12 steps.
Hi. Carrie H., compulsive overeater from Utah. 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we are powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks.
Thank you, Carrie. And Reggie O., would you please read the 12 traditions? Star one to unmute, Reggie.
Hi, good morning. It's that darn mute button again, but hello, twice in the same morning. This is Reggie O., grateful to be covered in Los Angeles and very grateful to be starting the week with you all this morning. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. Thank you.
Thank you, Reggie. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 127, the first paragraph, which starts the head of the house, and we'll be reading through 5 paragraphs, ending with, "They suspect Father is a bit balmy," and we will be commenting on all 5 paragraphs. So, Leslie M., would you please begin reading?
Good morning. This is Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York, and I just want to thank you, Kathleen O., for your service. The head of the house ought to remember that he is mainly to blame for what befell his home. He can scarcely square the account in his lifetime, but he must see the danger of over-concentration on financial success. Although financial recovery is on the way for many of us, we found we could not place money first. For us, material well-being always followed spiritual progress. It never preceded. Since a home has suffered more than anything else, it is well that a man exert himself there. He is not likely to go far in any direction if he fails to show unselfishness and love under his own roof. We know there are difficult wives and families, but the man who is getting over alcoholism must remember he did much to make them so. As each member of a resentful family begins to see his shortcomings and admits them to others, he lays a basis for helpful discussion. These family talks will be constructive if they can be carried on without heated argument, self-pity, self-justification, or resentful criticism. Little by little, mother and children will see if they ask too much, and father will see he gives too little. Giving rather than getting will become the guiding principle. Assume, on the other hand, that father has at the outset a stirring spiritual experience. Overnight, as it were, he is a different man. He becomes a religious enthusiast. He is unable to focus on anything else. As soon as his sobriety begins to be taken as a matter of course, the family may look at their strange new dad with apprehension, then with irritation. There is talk about spiritual matters morning, noon, and night. He may demand the family find God in a hurry or exhibit amazing indifference to them and say he's above worldly considerations. He may tell mother, who has been religious all her life, that she doesn't know what it's all about, that she had better get his brand of spirituality while there is yet time. When father takes this tack, the family may react unfavorably. They may be jealous of a God who has stolen dad's affections. While grateful that he drinks no more, they may not like the idea that God has accomplished the miracle where they failed. They often forget father was beyond human aid. They may not see why their love and devotion did not straighten him out. Dad is not so spiritual after all, they say. If he means to right his past wrongs, Why all this concern for everyone in the world but his family? What about his talk of his talk that God will take care of them? They suspect Father is a bit balmy. Once again, I'm Leslie M., recovered compulsive overeater in Long Island, New York. And, you know, there was a couple of lines in here that really sent me thinking that seemed, you know, appropriate to me. And it says, you know, the one line is, for us, material well-being always followed spiritual progress. It never preceded. And I, this time that I'm recovered, I've come back from a relapse where I really let go of my spiritual practices. I was sponsoring 5 people. I felt that was enough work for any one person to do. And, you know, I let go of my prayer and meditation in the morning. And, you know, it didn't have anything to do with material progress, but it certainly had to do with the relapse that I suffered. So I'm grateful that this time around I don't forget those things that I need to do on a daily basis. It also says here is he's not likely to get far in any direction if he fails to show unselfishness and love under his own roof. I'm single. I live by myself. The only one that lives with me is my dog, and I can really tell my irritability, restlessness, and discontent by the way I'm treating her every morning. If I'm, you know, telling her to hurry up, you know, move a little faster, walk at my pace, I can see where my selfishness will come back in, and it will definitely be affecting the people around me. You know, my extended family and my neighbors will have to deal with this person that's irritable, discontent, and restless. And so, you know, I really take that as my barometer each day. But it's very interesting. I had dinner with my family over the weekend, and on the way home, I was having a discussion, surprisingly, about God, excuse me, with my nephew. And, you know, I could really, instead of being that, you know, it's my way or the highway, I could just say to him, you know, I'm not sure exactly what God is. I believe God is love. But the only thing that I do know this time is that I'm not it. I know that, you know, all my interference, all my meddling, you know, has caused a lot of distress in the family, and that that I'm not in charge of it, you know. So I may not know, be able to, you know, tell you what my God is, but I can certainly say that I know today that I'm not it. And that's how, but prior in my other time in recovery, I would always tell people that they had to do it my way or the highway, or there was nothing else going on. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leslie. And if you're just joining us, we are on page 127, starting with the first paragraph, the head of the house. We'll be reading through 5 paragraphs, ending with, they suspect Father is a bit balmy, and we're commenting on all 5 paragraphs. So we're going to open this up for shares. Who would like to share on these 5 paragraphs?
Laura W., please.
Laura W.
Marie J.
Janet
H.
Janet H.
Melanie C.
Melanie C. We take a few more names.
Reggie O.
Reggie O.
Ann B.
Ann B. Okay, great. So I have Laura W., Marie J., Janet H., Melanie C., Reggie O., and Ann B. So if you're not Laura W., can you please press star 1 to mute your phone? And go ahead, Laura. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is Laura W. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic, and exercise bulimic in New Jersey. These paragraphs strike home to me. Although financial recovery is on the way for many of us, we found we could not place money first. This reminds me that I cannot serve 2 masters. I have found in my life and in my recovery that financial recovery and all the good stuff that comes along with being recovered happens slowly through recovery. You know, material well-being always followed spiritual progress. It never preceded. And, you know, the home has suffered more than anything else. This is really, it makes me sad to read that because it makes me think, oh my gosh, the damage that I've done over the years. You know, however, not to sit in morbid reflection, I'm not going to get far if I fail to show the 12 steps and show what it has done and what it can do and what my higher power does every day to my family. But with that being said, I work this program every single day, and I always say this, that this whole program is about new relationships with old people. And the behavior that I used to do and the ways that I used to speak and the actions that I used to take, I don't do that anymore, thank God, due to this program and due to God's gifts. But, you know, I can't push it on my kids. I can't tell them, well, you need a better higher power. You need to pray to God more. And, you know, I can't be over-enthusiastic with my spiritual awakening. But I found that over time, you know, it sort of just is the way that I live. It emits, and people change. People around me change. And it's not due to anything that I'm doing, but it's due to the fact that, you know, God's changing me one day at a time, and I'm less argumentative, and I'm less angry all the time. And my family, they appreciate that. You know, I'm beyond human aid, and I know that this is only due to God's gifts. So this is really important to me, the family afterward. I need to work this program with my family and with my close relatives and with my coworkers every single day because it's so easy to be kind and loving and generous to the people in program and my sponsor and my sponsees. But the more important aspect is to live this, not just, live it one day at a time. So, and you know, spirituality, it's just the beginning of a lifetime of searching for God and doing His will. And I'm grateful that I have, that there's no finish line here, you know, one day at a time. Thanks for letting me share. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Laura W. And Marie J., you're up, followed by Janet H.
Thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. This is Marie J., recovered in Colorado. And these paragraphs just have so much meat for me. You know, the head of the house, which in this case I'm that person, and I have to remember that I'm mainly to blame. And you know, that means I have to always have humility and remember that if I'm not the problem, there's no solution. I am the problem because the problem always exists between my ears and my expectations and all my character defects of self-righteousness and superiority and all the things that I put out there. And this seeing the danger of over-concentration on financial success and placing money first, this idea that material well-being always follows spiritual progress is so powerful because it was the last thing that I let go of control around. And I remember clearly in January of 2016 when I was really doing a lot of program work. I mean, you know, spending several hours a day, and I'm the sole income for my household of four. And I was so filled up with the spirit and recovery and wanting to do this and wanting to do God's will and be of service and loving that. But our finances were all in my hands also. So letting go of the idea that I had to put our finances first and put others first, including my family and including balance with my children and my husband and including balance in being of service in this community. And so I kept praying, you know, God, what do you want me to do? I only have so many hours in the day and I got a lot on my plate. And how can I do this? And I really finally accepted my situation, accepted that it was difficult and time wasn't mine to control. And I asked and I surrendered and I said, okay, I'm giving you my work. I'm surrendering this, and I'm going to stop doing all these things I'm doing to try to generate and push and get more business on my own. And And I did. I released it to God. And I said, when the phone rings, if it's business, I'll do business. And if it's service, I will do service. And if it's family, I will do family. And, you know, it's kind of amazing how much better a job God's doing than me in that. And managing it all without any of my help. I have all the same issues and all the same time issues and all the same stuff up, but I don't manage it anymore. I don't do marketing and chase business down. The phone rings. God shows up. And I'm still, you know, why am I surprised when God shows up for me? So all I do is maintain my spiritual connection and my spiritual condition and answer the calls that come to me, the calls to do whatever service it is that God wants me to do. And it's not to say that fear doesn't come up and self-reliance and self-control and self-will don't want to come up. Every day I got to wake up with that woman. And
I'm pleased.
Like right now. Oh, sorry, then I'll stop there. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Marie J. And Janet H., you're up next, followed by Melanie C.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Janet H., and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. This is my first time sharing. I've only been to this meeting once before, and I love what I've heard so far. And I want to thank anyone that might be on the line that called me. I got 6 calls. I actually talked to the first 3, and after that, I was busy with my local OA issues or, you know, meetings and stuff here and friends. So I just really appreciated the calls. I felt very welcome. So thanks for that. The thing that caught me the most this morning was giving rather than getting will become the guiding principle. And that to me is just so true of recovery in general, but I love the way that was stated there. You know, and it talks in other places in the book about instead of thinking what we can get out of life, seeing what we can pack into the stream of life. I know I paraphrase that, but you know, it's just a way of thinking that I thank God over time has become more a part of my life. You know, the thing that I was thinking about when he was saying that I actually planned on hitting a 3-minute timer and I forgot, so I'm going to try to keep it short here. Restraint of pen and tongue has been really important for me in terms of dealing with family. And, you know, I sort of raised myself. I was raised in an alcoholic and compulsive overeating family. I'm dealing with my mother is still an issue for me. I live alone, so I can't relate to family in my home, but that's the family I deal with the most. And I've been able to be loving towards her no matter what. And that's taken me a lot of years in recovery to get there. But it feels wonderful because I'm able to give to her what she was never able to give to me. And I get healed through that process. And then I have to take responsibility for my disease, of course. And that's, you know, such a big part of working this program. You know, basically my friends are my family, and I had a situation yesterday with a friend that was difficult, and she said some things that didn't make sense to me in terms of what I know to be true, and rather than coming out trying to prove my point or prove that I was right, I was able to be loving and kind in the situation and let it go, and that is not something I would have been able to do earlier, and it hits me just that I intuitively knew how to handle a situation that used to baffle me, because in the past it's always about me being right and making sure they knew that. And so I'm extremely grateful to this program that I no longer have to do that, at least not all the time. I'm imperfect like everybody. So I'm really grateful to be here and for all the people being of service. Thank you for your service, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Janet. Your timing was perfect. And Melanie C., you're up next, followed by Reggie O.
Thank you, Kathleen O. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm calling in from Oregon. Whenever I read things like this in the big book, I'm taken to, which was really a helpful piece to read because it felt like in this particular way, it really was real life, real practical. There is a story in the back of the book called Acceptance Was the Answer, and it was written by Dr. Paul O, and he talks a lot about his relationship with his wife. And he says at the bottom of 419, it hasn't been easy to work out this relationship with Max, that's the name of his wife. On the contrary, it's the hardest place to work this program. Did I read that right? The hardest place to work this program has been in my own home, with my own children, and finally with Max. It seems I should have learned to love my family and wife first. And what he was talking about, and what I learned through some history here, is that not that he's doing it, not that we're espousing that in any way, shape, or form, we're not saying that in terms of a 12-step recovery and doing 12-step work. Yet in the essence of it, because of the amount of damage that I did in my own household, that the greatest work really was there. I saw what happened to my husband over the course of 25 years, and I know without any hesitation that the disease within me and the way that I developed my character contributed to what I saw happen to him. And then, as a result of the step work over a period of time, watch this man come to life again. It has been astounding. And not only that, that something has happened with me, that the desire to do what I did before is not even there. And that's a miracle. I had done that for 50 some odd years. It's just the way I did business. And the undertone of quite frankly being a bully all the time when I went back to study those particular behaviors of mine. And that it has been so sweet to see the relief of that kind of thing, because I was so hard driven. I couldn't stop myself from doing the things that I do. And I am standing back in amazement that there truly is a power that leapt out of this big book for me and changed who and what I was from the very, very start. I am humbled by the idea that I will live a lifetime of amends to these folks that stayed with me all these years. I know where I would have been had I not had the support of these people in my family that never, ever, my husband never, ever, 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 ever judged anything that I did, anything I tried to do in order to make things better for me, and never, never did anything but try to make me happy. And the God of my understanding is providing a way that I am driven. This is not in me. I am driven to amend that and flip the tides so the life is my husband's at this point. And I'm grateful. I can't even tell you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Melanie C. And Reggie O, you're up next, followed by Ann B.
Yeah, thank you, Kathleen. Again, this is Reggie O, very gratefully recovered in Los Angeles area. And I can so relate to parts of what everybody has said so far this morning into this reading. And, you know, starting in that first paragraph, although financial recovery is on the way for many of us, we found we could not place money first. For us, material well-being always followed spiritual progress. It never preceded. And that's my earning capacity and ability over the course of my adult life has been directly related to my compulsive eating and where I've been on the path to that. It's kind of like, you know, compulsive under-earning goes along with compulsive overeating, which is really strange. But, you know, it brought me back to sometime many years ago when I was recovered once before, had a long, deep recovery. And I went into that recovery, you know, with financial issues that had come about after a history of the compulsive eating through some of my professional career. And I was able to I think I was gifted with being able to really place my spiritual progress first rather than the money. And it really happened for me. You know, my professional life opened up, the money came, that came really very easily. You know, in fact, every area of my life opened up. And, and then I had the experience of what I've heard people say before, letting the gifts of the program keep me from the gifts of program. And I eventually slipped away from that, very gradually slipped away from my spiritual recovery until I felt like I just popped loose from program and the recovery and everything. And this is, you know, and as I have come into vision for you, that's, I'm coming in the same place again. You know, I came in the same place just many years later. And it's really, really important for me to remember that, you know, spiritual progress comes first. And in this part, and I'm also, I've recently moved, and I moved from living alone for 4 years to living in a very wonderful home with three other people and two other dogs besides mine. And I'm reminded, you know, that this is, I really need to practice my program here. And not only that, but I want to practice my program here. And I'm reminded that the home, you know, whatever that is, the home, the most intimate ones in my life have always been the most, they've been definitely a very challenging place for me to practice this, because I face I face people that I'm living with or that I'm close to day in and day out. I can't run and can't hide except, you know, in the presence of them. And that can do a lot of damage. And I have done that in the past. And I'm reminded, you know, both for, you know, financial recovery and this that we're being talked about, so we're talking about right now, giving rather than getting will become the guiding principle. And
time, please.
And that's my time, so I will pass. Grateful to be able to share.
Thank you, Reggio. And Ann B., you're up next. And after Ann B., we'll be taking some more names. We're on page 127, the first paragraph, the head of the house, and we're reading through five paragraphs. So Ann B., please go ahead.
Hi, this is Ann B., compulsive overeater. I don't like that word recovered, but I have been abstinent for 13 years. When I first joined program, I really was that fanatic. I wanted to tell everybody about how wonderful it was. And one of the things that was wonderful for me was that I did rediscover my spiritual life that had been very important to me prior to having children. And once I had children, I always felt my children came first. And I think putting my children ahead of God was a big cause of why I gained so much weight. And what I discovered, you know, that people really didn't want to hear about my problems. And I think that, you know, that's one of those boundaries issues, I think, that I learned about in program. I'm not one of those people who was super concerned about anonymity. I was more the kind of person who wanted to tell everybody everything that happened to me. And people really don't want to hear about it. And I don't think, and they didn't necessarily want to hear about the solution to the problem or the solution to the problem either. And I, on the one hand, I feel a little wistful about that lost sense of evangelical zeal that I had. But on the other hand, I think now, you know, what I do, I wait until somebody says something and then suggest it gently. I don't make it the first topic I bring up with everybody I talk to. And I don't know if I've gotten anyone interested in OA who didn't have some other connection to 12 steps. But I guess that's sort of how people change. I think in the research, they hear a little bit from several people, and then they start thinking, well, maybe I should try it. Usually just one person telling them isn't enough. So anyway, I certainly do see an attitude now that I've been in program for over 13 years. Actually, it's going to be 14 years next week. That I'm not that person, that evangelical person that I was. So I'll pass.
Thank you, Ann B. Okay, we are on page 127 in the chapter The Family Afterward, the first paragraph, which begins with the head of the house. And we're reading through five paragraphs, ending with "A suspect father is a bit balmy." We'll be commenting on all five paragraphs. So who else would like to share on those five paragraphs?
Liz T.
Abby
S.
I'm sorry.
Wendy B.
Who was before Wendy B?
Abby S.
Okay, I'm hearing garbled. I have Liz T. and Wendy B.
Abby S.
Laura. Two people came in at once. Laura and who else?
Jackie
Abby
L.
S.
Abby S.
Abby S.
Wendy M.
Wendy M.
And Jackie L.
I think, was it Jenny L?
Jackie L.
Oh, Jackie L. Jackie L. And was there one other person that was trying to get in there?
Susan H.
Okay. So let's stop there. I have Liz, if I have this right, Liz T, Wendy B, Laura, I didn't get your first initial, Abby S, Wendy M, Jackie L, and Susan H. So Liz T, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My name is Liz T. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. And today's reading, I can relate all over the place to this. I circled all the spots in this reading that say economic problem, money troubles, the family feeling neglected, the character defects of irritable, restless, discontented, the crankiness, depression, or apathy. And then the hope that this will disappear when there is tolerance, love, and spiritual understanding. And I can get just weepy about this because I came into this program in financial ruins. I own a business, and I still to this day have $70,000 in personal debt. I went into a lot of debt to build my dental practice. I'm a dentist. And thinking that was part of my spirituality, thinking bigger is better, a new location, the latest and greatest equipment and materials and all of that. And in that process of building our new practice and relocating, I was eating myself to death. I was going from 200 pounds to 225 to 250 in rapid succession. And the harder I worked and the bigger and greater and awesomer my practice became, the more secluded and isolated and depressed I became. And it was just all part of my spiritual malady. So I can identify into all of this. Today my life is better. There is hope. I have gotten outside help outside of OA, but it was working the steps within OA and a sponsor from A Vision for You that I am able to face my financial issues. If I was still eating, there's no way in hell I'd be going to Debtors Anonymous like I am today with the fervor and the commitment that I am and working that program as well. So I'm just super grateful. I'm slowly scraping my way out of this debt. It's going to take time. It's not an overnight matter. The hopefulness is that today my husband and I can sit down at the kitchen table and look at my spreadsheets and talk and not become, in a screaming fight like we did 4 years ago when I first came in and there was so much despair and hopelessness. I mean, if you want to talk about suicidal, try walking around with mountains of debt on your shoulders and chest. I mean, some of those days in that darkness were even worse than the days in the food. And so and as a mother, I'm this type of mother that it's like, I love you and I would die for you. Now go away. I mean, that's how I treat my kids even sometimes still to this day. Like,
time, please.
I need my quiet time. I need my rest. And, it's just part of my recovery to learn to be a better mother and not let this financial ruin cloud my ability to be a parent and a wife. So with that, I'll pass, and I really appreciate everyone being there today. Pass.
Thank you, Liz T. And Wendy B., you're up next, followed by Laura, and I don't think we're going to get to everybody, but go ahead, Wendy B.
Hi, this is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And this whole section here where it says he becomes a religious enthusiast, he is unable to focus on anything else. And then there was talk about spiritual matters, morning, noon, and night, and he may demand that his family find God in a hurry or exhibit amazing indifference to them. And he says he's above worldly considerations. He's telling others they don't know what it's all about. And, I can just relate so well to this description of religious extremes. You know, I have so much arrogance. You know, I go around with this holier-than-thou attitude, looking down on those around me. And it it just reminds me of on page 18 where it talks about we have no holier than thou attitude, you know, and daily I have to take my arrogance and my self-righteousness to God, and he's gradually changing me. You know, I used to be in a religious cult, you know, taking this to the extreme. So I really need a deep transformation, you know, in this area. And, you know, I would try to push it on others, you know, proselytizing my message and how I just love the principle that we have in this program that it's attraction, not promotion, you know, and I can learn to be the message and let it be lived out in me, and I don't have to try to push it on those around me and thinking I'm so right, you know, and it's like such an affront to God when I have that arrogance, you know, that I know what's right when I don't, you know, and I'm just so grateful to be in this program and learning how to think rightly about things, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy. And Laura, you're up next, followed by Abby S. Maybe I didn't hear a Laura. Okay, let's go with Abby S, followed by Wendy M.
Hi, this is Abby S, recovered in Southern California. Thank you for allowing me to share it today. This was exactly the reading I needed to hear today. I was just doing a 10th step last night about my mom, and the resentment was that I didn't like the way that she was behaving spiritually, religiously. She's not doing it right. And, you know, like, that's just, I come to this program to hear the solution. The solution is that I need to recognize that that's me being a total evangelist, trying to push my ways on other people. You know, I didn't recover to tell everyone what to do. And it's just the hope that I find in this program where I can hear from other people how they've dealt with it, how they used to behave that way and think that way, and now they don't. It gives me a lot of hope, because what I want to be for my family is loving. And, you know, like, nobody pushed that on me. When I came in this program, nobody was cornering me no one was cornering me, telling me, like, what I need to believe, how I need to behave. It was, like, gentle, loving, like, just gentle and loving, and I was able to come to my own solution. And I know that, like, if people try to tell me what to do, I dig my feet into the ground even harder. So even if I'm wrong, like, if someone else tells me what to do, it's like I just take the stance of not wanting to listen, and I don't want to do that to other people either. I want to be kind, and I want to be loving, and in a week from now, I'm going on a trip to stay with my mom for a week, and I just know I'm going to need all the support, and I'm just really grateful to hear from other people that they have words of encouragement on how they've been loving to their family. And it's definitely been, like, the hardest place for me to work the program is with my family. I don't even live with my family, but the fact that they're taking up so much headspace, you know, I really just need to change me. And I'm grateful for this program. I'm open to any outreach about this too, Abby S, just because I need to hear the solution, and I'm grateful to be recovered today, and I'm grateful to, you know, it's a miracle. At one point, I didn't think that I would be able to stop eating, and my higher power did that for me, and so it gives me hope when I think, like, oh, it'll never be different with these character defects, they're just too much. Like, I tend to get really down on myself, but it's like, you know, God's bigger than all of this, and thinking about the things I never thought I would be able to do in the past is helpful for me now to realize that, you know, I can ask my higher power to change me and hear
time,
from other
please.
People on how they're doing it. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Abby S. And Wendy M., you're up, followed by Jackie L.
Yes, good morning, Wendy M., recovered gratefully in Boulder, Colorado. Thanks, moderator, for your efforts today, your service, and everybody online. So last night, my tools were self-pity, self-justification, resentful criticism, and expectations. And I can tell you that those tools actually didn't work. And I can tell you that I didn't wake up feeling horrible about myself and completely just morbid reflection at all. It was like, oh, that happened. This is an inventory, a daily inventory. And what do I get to do today, right? How can that change? And that is huge progress for me to not beat myself up and say, oh, horrible person, you know, I'll never get this right. No, on the contrary, it was like, oh, huh, that happened. And I have a design for living. You know, they say insulin helps the diabetic, but it doesn't give the diabetic a design for living. This program gives me a design for living. It says, we're not going to beat you up today. We're just going to take an inventory and see what we can do differently. You know, and when we talk about giving and not getting, to me, that's going from emotional immaturity to emotional maturity, right? That I can be a grown-up today, that I can take responsibility for these tools that I used last night, right? And I can take responsibility for being a grown-up today. You know, that to me, so much of this program is, Wendy, are you willing to take responsibility? Are you willing to not depend on other people 24/7 and depend on God, you know? And go from getting to giving, because getting feels awful. I've said many times it feels scratchy, right? So if I'm into getting in a situation, it's never good. It always feels scratchy. I always get small, and I always want to control you because I have to get something from you, right? But if I'm giving, you know, my shoulders relax. I mean, God's alignment instantly, the minute I say, what can I give to this situation? What can I bring to the situation? How can I be helpful to this person rather than what can I get? You know, it's just, it's such a simple program. And thank God it's for a lifetime, right? Because I don't have to get it right this morning. I don't have to get it right last night. I get to just learn, grow, take responsibility, make an amends if needed, which in this case I think it is, you know, and make the decision. I get to make a decision every day. Do I want to be a grown-up and an adult in this situation and be giving? Or do I want to get, be a child, be small, be emotionally immature, and control the heck out of you and everybody else so that I get what I need? It really is a decision I get to make every day, all the time.
Time,
during
please.
The day. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much, moderator.
Thank you, Wendy. And Jackie L., you're up next. Susan, I'm sorry, we're probably not going to have enough time.
Yes.
And Jackie, if you could keep your share to about 2 minutes.
Okay, actually, I want to say thank you all for your service, and I'm going to pass. And I'm going to pass because I need to listen. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Jackie. So, Susan H., you have about 2 minutes. Star one to unmute, Susan.
All right, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, this is Susan H., recovering compulsive overeater. Thanks for everyone sharing. I have a really quick share. To me, this is all about relationships, which are hard for addicts. Right. And so right when we take away our addictions, what's the first thing we want to do? We want to run to another addiction, which is fixing things, which is fixing our finances, fixing other people. When in reality, what our problem was is always relationships. How do I go and be a person in a relationship, which isn't about fixing? It's about just being. And this talks about how people, at first you feel like everyone else is perfect and you are the fault of everything. And then you realize, well, gee, they're human too. And they're going through their own things. And that's the complexity of relationships and what we get to do when we take away our addictions. And so with that, I'll pass and think about my relationships. Thanks for everyone's shares. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Susan. And thank you everyone who shared today. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Kathy G., will you please read A Vision for You?
Thanks, Kathleen. This is Kathy G., recovered compulsive overeater from Illinois. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We will be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.